Any other questions for the commissioner? Senator Szymanski.
Since it's roughly March 24th, do you have any rough idea what the price of oil has gone up per barrel since the tanker accident?
How much has it gone up?
It's pretty hard to segregate the differences in the increases in oil price between the...
rough ballpark figure. I haven't been able to monitor.
Senator, I'd be hesitant to give a number. Prices have gone up, and as you know, they're bouncing at least the Gulf Coast in the $19 plus range. But I don't know how much of that might be due to interruption in supply or people's anticipation of a shortening supply, and how much of it is due to extraneous factors.
Senator Kelly.
I would say that the fact that, you know, we've had to reduce the pipeline throughput at a time when oil's fetching premium prices costs the state more money on top of that, whatever the spill's going to cost. Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Senator Kelly.
Does the administration support this legislation?
Madam Chairman, in the official sense, I don't think there's a position administration. I'll tell you what, though, we're going to need the money.
Any other questions for the commissioner? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Commissioner, were you going to be testifying on any of the other bills?
Madam Chairman, since there are none, at least nominated as tax measures, I don't have any particular portfolio to comment on. The one that comes the closest to it is SB 266, which, while it's not described as a tax, would operate the same way. The 2 cents a barrel keep full fund, $20 million keep full fund, I commented about the inability maybe a step in the right direction, SB 260, to come close to compensating the people of Alaska for the economic harm that has occurred. And while not normally speaking you'd expect the perpetrator to pay the bill, I think our history in these events is that as soon as the heat of the incident cools down, you see these people in court, it takes a long time to collect anything. And I think that's what will happen here. To the extent that SB 260 addresses part of that problem, it seems to me that the other bill addresses a much smaller part of it. But I don't have any particular comments on it. I don't know whether the members ever yet received the fiscal note that I know I signed one on SB 266. For the information that members of the committee, which is probably simple to calculate on your own, but it would, at two cents a barrel, and there's some limitations on the oil stream that's taxed under Senate Bill 266, estimate that $13 million would be deposited in the keep full fund the first year. If we didn't have to spend money cleaning up another spill or something, we'd reach this $20 million sometime in fiscal 91. So the only fiscal note we were able to prepare would show receipts of $13 million for fiscal 90, assuming the bill had immediate effective date starting the beginning of that fiscal year, and another $7 million in the ensuing year.
We do not yet have that fiscal note. Perhaps if you could either leave one or get one to us, we'll make it available to everyone.
Madam Chairman, perhaps I should have brought it over here. I think I signed it up.
Senator Halford.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think I did send you a letter that dealt with the rate at which that 2 cents fills the fund, suggesting that it might be 3 or 4 cents to fill it faster because it's capped anyway. It's not a larger impact, but it is getting $20 million available sooner by increasing that a couple cents.
Okay. Mr. Malone, would it be fair for us to assume that since there's no fiscal note for the separate accounting on Senate Bill 260, there would also be no fiscal note for separate accounting on 266 or any other measure that sets up a separate fund off to the side?
Madam Chairman, I think that if the only thing that has to be done is once a year, quarterly, or even monthly, a report on the amounts in the fund generated, that you can safely assume that the cost is de minimis, just the additional item in the monthly reporting. It won't be a problem. It depends, I think, on if there are other duties or responsibilities associated with that accounting beyond, for example, what we see in the legislation, either of those bills. But I would expect that the fiscal note, and I can't speak for the Commissioner Administration, but I can say that the costs of doing the accounting are next to zero. It wouldn't show up in the fiscal note.
Okay, thank you. Senator Szymanski.
I'd like to go back just briefly, because you're going to really leave, to the original question. What I was going to lead into was trying to put in comparison. Your testimony, you indicated that, at least from your perspective, 5 cents a barrel would have almost an insignificant, or would not, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it would not have an effect on production or development from your perspective. Traditionally, anytime we've talked about increasing taxation on the industry, we've heard everything from you're going to kill the goose that's laying the golden egg. We've heard various other scenarios that it directly takes away from production and development. In this case, a 5 cent a barrel assessment, while I don't have the figures here, is in relative terms small compared to what the price of crude oil is today and what has probably shot up. And I was just kind of curious if you had any other observations on what really the impact of 5 cents a barrel would mean.
Well, Madam Chairman, I think it's fair to say that there hasn't been really an adequate time to do a careful analysis on some of the smaller prospects. The comment I made earlier, however, I think pretty reasonably applies to the situation, which is, given the volatility of oil prices, 5 cents is small, and it's unlikely the bill would affect any production decisions. The production decisions that I have seen that might be affected by various small changes in the tax levy were based on hypothetical cases and not cases in the real world, say, quoting today's oil prices. So I can't give a better answer than that right now, Madam Chair.
Senator Kelly.
Is the pipeline now at full production or full transportation?
I don't know what it's doing right this minute, but as of yesterday, it was.
Have you guys anticipated what the loss will be in the down production?
Yes. I don't have the numbers with me, but there has been a calculation made, and the calculation is based on an assumption that the pipeline would have been producing at the rate that it was, the throughput would have been at the rate that it was before the spill. And the remark I made earlier was that when it was necessary to reduce the throughput, it also happened at a time of, well, relatively speaking for us, premium oil prices. And so we have the effects of the spill, whatever those costs are, and then we have the revenue loss that is results from not being able to collect the royalty income and the tax income on that increment of production. And that eventually, I suppose, that oil will be produced, but it will be quite a long time before the production loss can be made up. But yes, I did have an estimate of that prepared, and I'd be glad to supply it to you. Unfortunately, I do not have it with me right now.
Any other questions for the Commissioner? Thank you very much.
I don't think a lot of people think that industry has laid any golden eggs recently.
Laid a few eggs.
Deputy Commissioner. You know, I forgot to ask the Department of Law whether or not they also wanted to do a kind of a 5-minute overview before we did specific bills, but why don't you launch into yours, if you would, please, and we'll check with them.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on the several bills that you have before you. Before we comment on each of the specific bills, I thought it would be valuable to describe some of the issues that we see as critical to an effective legislative package to address hazardous substance spills, including oil spills. These thoughts and recommendations that I'm going to present now are preliminary, as most of our departmental expertise in this area is still in the field responding to the Valdez incident. It has had quite a severe impact on us, and we have lost the use of most of our employees that work in this field for the last 2 weeks, as well as key management people. And so we're not able to give you as full a picture as we'll be able to when we've had a chance to fully debrief on this incident and to fully develop our position. Nonetheless, we would like to share the thoughts that we've had up to now. We did pull these together through teleconference between Anchorage, Juneau, and Valdez today. We also don't yet have fully developed comments on each bill in terms of specific recommended changes, though we have some general comments that we'll offer at the appropriate point in your proceedings. What we've done in this short paper is to identify the key issues that we see as needing some discussion and perhaps resolution through the legislative process. The first one is the structure of contingency planning and response. In the statute now, the relationship between operators, the state, and other interested parties in both preventing and responding to hazardous substance releases needs some thorough analysis and possibly change. At present, the industry has the lead both in developing plans to respond to spills and also in carrying out the actual response. The state is left in a largely reactive posture, and other interested parties such as local communities, fishing groups, and so on are basically not included in the structure that we have right now. In the event of an inadequate response, the state's recourse under existing statute is to take over the spill response directly from the responsible party. At present, our department's resources to conduct such an operation are extremely limited. And as a result, the practical remedy in existing statute for the failure of the industry to perform is largely ineffective, in that the threat is that the state may take over the response operation, but practically speaking, we just don't have anywhere near the resources or infrastructure we need to do that. We need to look at whether the state should have an independent ability to initiate and carry out a meaningful response without relieving the responsible party of their responsibility for reaction to a spill. It might be appropriate to consider providing authority to compel a response according to approved contingency plans. Another approach is to create a state strike force, as has been suggested in some of the legislation. It may be that a combination of these approaches would yield the best results. With regard to contingency planning, at this time the lead on planning is left to the operators of facilities. While cooperative agreements between different operations are possible, they're not required, and there's no requirement for participation in any statewide database or response planning structure. The major lesson of this spill is that we cannot rely on the structure we have now, and that we need to look at ways to improve responsiveness. And as I say, I think that the bills you have before you have approached that in some different ways, and we really support that, the notion of doing that. The second issue is adequate funding for both prevention and response activities. It's a grave concern of ours to assure adequate funding for both prevention and response activities. Several bills propose funding sources for a reliable, adequate response fund. There must also be adequate funding for prevention, response planning, and ongoing preparedness. This is a critical component of an effective solution, as I think has been recognized by the type of legislation you're considering. The third area that we need to look at is our penalties. The penalties provided in the existing legislation need to be re-examined. Again, you have legislation before you that takes a crack at that. We support increases in penalties to more closely reflect actual damages. We also need to review the adequacy of our criminal penalties in our statute. Current requirements for a demonstration of financial responsibility for operators need to be updated to more accurately reflect actual foreseeable damages to ensure that entities have the financial capability to pay for actual damages. We recommend that the legislature also specifically address the problem of derelict vessels abandoned on state tidelands, which we've seen in a couple of places already. And we believe that penalties for failure to comply with the regulations, as well as those for spilling oil into the water or other hazardous substances into the water, need to be addressed. The fourth area is prevention. We believe that the legislature might want to consider a review of the navigation aids that govern tanker traffic in the waters of the state to determine whether enhancements could reduce the likelihood of collisions, groundings, and other problems. We believe that the department should be given the authority to look at ways to prevent spills, in addition to the authority to look at ways to respond to spills, in that I think we've all recognized that prevention is far preferable to response. The next area is technology. We believe that improved technology needs to be identified and developed here. Experience in this spill indicates that other countries have technology, such as the large Soviet skimmer that's on route to Alaska, and Norwegian boom deployment vessels that the Norwegians who visited us have described to us, that is substantially better than what is currently described here as the state of the art. We believe it's important to review that technology and to identify areas where more research and development is needed. And we've discussed with the Norwegian Pollution Control Authority officials the establishment of a working relationship for such a technical exchange and for training. One thought to think about would be whether a training center for northern climates could be appropriate to possibly establish in Alaska. And then our last point that we would like or ask that you consider is that in Prince William Sound, the best expertise available on how to move vessels and materials on the water came from the fishermen, without any question. The fishermen and other residents of the area have provided invaluable guidance and direction for those parts of the cleanup and defensive operations that have proven successful. The response plan needs to tap this expertise. We found that expensive equipment can be flown in from all over the world, but still not be of great value if the people deploying it don't have local knowledge on how to actually make it work in the waters here. And in some of the legislation before you, the use of trained volunteers from local communities has been suggested, and this is a method we would support. There may also be others, as an example, in Norway, volunteers are trained in each community for spill response in a way that resembles fire departments here. So we think there's a lot we could do to better tap the expertise that we have in Alaska for response. I think our last conclusion is that a combination of state, local, and industry response capacity in conjunction with adequate state agency funding and authority is a promising approach and is really what's needed. So I appreciate the chance to present some basic ideas here. As I say, we've not had the chance to fully develop detailed comments on every bill, but we have reviewed them all and have some general comments to offer at the appropriate time in your proceedings. So I thank you for this opportunity.
I have a question. On your first page at the very bottom, you say, with regard to contingency planning, all planning is left to operators of facilities. Would you mind explaining how your present, who has to do a contingency plan or a response plan? Does everyone, in other words, do I have to be a TAPS terminal? Do I have to be just a person owning a gas station? Who has to do those? And does the department at the moment in our statutes have the authority to check off on each one, and if you don't approve the plan, then they have to go back and fix it until you do approve it, or where are we at the moment?
Yes, the oil terminals that store more than 10,000 barrels and tankers are required to have contingency plans. That's a fairly high threshold, 10,000 barrel storage. It wouldn't encompass any gas stations or any facilities like that. The plans do have
10,000 barrels or gallons? I'm sorry.
Barrels.
Barrels, okay.
I'm sorry, did I say it backwards?
No, I think you said it right. I just wanted to make sure.
Okay, yes, it's 10,000 barrels. The department does have to approve the plans after they're submitted to us. I think what we found through our experience in working with these facilities is that it is a very time-consuming process to get the facilities to submit the kind of plans that we really think we need to have. And the structural issue is that simply because the facility is left pretty much with the lead authority to actually prepare the plan and then to carry out the response, the state is always in a reactive mode in trying to respond to that. And I think our thinking is that a more activist role for the state might is something that we should very seriously look at here.
Okay, I know you are specifically talking about oil spills. I appreciate that, but Does the Alaska Railroad have a requirement to have a contingency plan should they have another event of one of their tankers having hazardous, releasing hazardous substances?
Not that I'm aware. They wouldn't be required to have a contingency plan under our statute. There may be some other statute that they would have that would require that, but under state statutes are very limited in this regard. They require contingency plans just for oil terminals over a certain size and for tanker vessels. Federal statutes have advanced considerably further than that through the recent amendments to the federal Superfund law, which require planning for response to other kinds of hazardous substance releases. But that's not been incorporated into state law, and I think it's fair to say that Alaska is lags behind what other states have incorporated into their own laws in that regard.
Okay. This is specifically to Senator Duncan's bill, which would require DEC reviews and of contingency plans, a master plan, and regional plans. It's my understanding that the way the bill is written, does not pertain just to oil spills. So that would be requiring DEC to have contingency plans for eventualities where the maker of the spill doesn't even have to have a plan. Is that correct?
As I interpret that bill, there's not a requirement that every facility have its own contingency plan. There's a requirement that the state adopt a master plan for response, and that we may adopt regional plans in areas where there are existing oil contingency plans. And so that bill provides for a more coordinated look at response statewide and also on a regional basis. And as part of that, you would want to inventory all your potential sources of hazardous substance releases so as to identify all the possible incidents you'd have to respond to. But it doesn't strictly require an individual plan for each facility. You know, you could approach it so as to say, look in a town, see what all the potential sources of releases are, and then identify what your response resources are in that area, which would not require a separate plan for each facility, but would still have the benefit that I think Senator Duncan contemplated of enhancing an overall coordination and preparedness.
Hey, Rick, because your bill weighs 20 every year.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and, after this conversation's finished, begin going through on an individual bill-by-bill basis, unless does any other senator have an overview-type question for the Deputy Commissioner?
I have to grab my other files if you want to do that.
Okay, why don't you do that, and maybe Senator Smansky will have thought of his question by the time you get back. Have you thought of it, Senator?
Yes, I have. In your prepared remarks, you dealt with going beyond having an adequate response fund, and you touched on having an adequate funding for prevention, planning, and ongoing preparedness. The prevention you touched on as an example would be navigational aids. Response planning, which you touched on by at least one of the other bills which we have, or Senator Duncan's planning bill, I assume that's in there. But ongoing preparedness, I wonder if you could just maybe touch on that a little more. Is there something with regard to being having preparedness there that we're missing now that we should be doing?
Madam Chairman, there are basically two related ideas that we were contemplating in those remarks. One is to enhance the state's ability to ensure that the level of preparedness that's supposed to exist really does exist. I think that it's important to be able to have the resources to look at whether the equipment that's supposed to be available is available, whether it works, whether people know how to deploy it, and so on and so forth. And that's been an area that has long needed some more attention. The second thing that we were contemplating there is to establish an emergency response capability within the department, which is something that we've wanted to do for a couple of years, so that we could develop for ourselves a structure that would allow us to readily deploy in the event of a response situation, and to basically plan and prepare for that in advance. The way that our budget has been structured is that we have had some resources to do the ongoing plan reviews and some to do the inspections, but we have never really funded an emergency response capability that would allow us to plan for, set in motion the types of arrangements and structures that we need to effectively respond. And that's something that is provided in some of the legislation that you have, probably to a greater degree than anything that we've proposed up to now. But that's the kind of thing that was intended to address.
Yeah, I stand corrected. Senator Kelly's bill certainly is one that deals with preparedness and that. So you're in concurrence with the general concept of most of the bills before us, I assume, then.
Yes, in general, yes. I think all of the elements that we've described here are present in varying types in the different bills. So that's one reason we wanted to give you one single paper to describe the issues that we saw and then try to comment on the bills. The different ones approach the issues a little bit differently, so there's a problem just synthesizing that into an approach that makes sense. But yeah, I think that there are good things about all of those bills, and it's a matter of sorting out from all of the available material here what the best overall approach would be.
Senator Kelly?
One of the concerns is there seems to be a great deal of support in the legislature for some type of response effort, independent response effort from the state. One of the concerns seems to be the liability to the state in the event of a spill. And that's a concern I've heard from you. In other words, if we send a group of folks out there, are we taking over liability for any of the costs incurred? And I think what I'd like to see from the department is some language to go with these response bills that indicate that we are not taking over any liability, any responsibility. They are the first, they still have responsibility for the initial containment efforts, and this is in any state response is simply to augment those efforts. And I appreciate it if you guys can come up with that kind of language, or maybe start a law or something to, or by tomorrow if you could.
Madam Chairman, we would rely on the Department of Law to work on that. Your point is exactly right. We agree completely with that notion that you don't want to alleviate the responsible parties of any of their liability by any of these other structures that you put in place. So we're definitely in agreement on the policy perspective, and would rely on the Department of Law to advise us on the specific language. So I will attempt to acquire that for you by tomorrow.
The Department of Law in the body of the Attorney General Mertz, or Assistant Attorney General Mertz, has been kind of bouncing in and out of the room because they do have some things to say on a couple of the bills. So, Senator Kelly?
The other thing I'll just mention, Amy, in case I forget it in passing, is we've got 8 C-130s sitting here at Coles Air National Guard Base in Anchorage. And there's no reason in the world why we couldn't have equipment palletized and ready to drop, you know, in 10 minutes notice with those 130s. And any plan you guys come up with in the future, I would hope that you would provide for palletized spill containment equipment at Coolis Air National Guard Base. They can get to anywhere in the state, almost anywhere in the state, I would guess within about 4 or 5 hours. They get to Juneau in 2 hours, you know, just go out radius around there. But that would probably be the quickest type response to any unforeseeable location that
we come up with. Madam Chair, I think that's really an excellent suggestion. We've worked a lot with the National Guard, actually as well as the Civil Air Patrol, in this last operation, and they've given us a tremendous amount of help up to now, and I think that that's a good idea to incorporate that into the plan.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and begin on any specifics that you want to give us?
Do you have an order in which
let's take them in numerical order, starting with 261 and work our way up.
That's how I have it, too. I'll be brief in this. I know you have other people you want to hear from. Senate Bill 261 is the bill that would establish a requirement for a master response plan. It would also provide funding for response and planning activities. Briefly, setting aside the issue of which revenue source is the right one, which is out of our jurisdiction, we believe that a revenue source that provides adequate funding for these programs is a key component of a successful solution. We believe that the idea here of an integrated master plan for the state is a very good idea that would allow us to identify the best ways to tie together all the available resources and look at what needs to be available statewide to respond in different areas. It would allow us to look at how resources in Cook Inlet and Prudhoe Bay could perhaps work together to provide an overall response. The emphasis on community involvement and the involvement of other groups, we think, also is very beneficial in that I think that those groups have a lot to offer an effective response, and the ability to look at issues of preparedness and prevention in this model is also a good feature of this bill. So we support this approach as it's presented here. Is that enough detail?
That's enough detail for me. There may be questions. Have you had an opportunity to even think about a fiscal note?
On this, we took them up in numerical order, so we're the furthest along on this bill. We do have a draft fiscal note on this bill that would utilize the program receipts, and our estimate is that it would take us three people with a budget for a consultant of about $125,000, 2 years to get this done. So our fiscal note runs at about just over $300,000 for 2 years, and then it would drop back a little bit from that. So that's an estimate for what our cost would be. We've not fully analyzed whether there would be other costs that would need to get paid for some of the other parties to participate here.
And these three people would be on contract because they would belong to a consultant, or you would need three people plus a consultant?
Three people in-house plus a consultant for 2 years. After that, we would handle it in-house. But there would be a startup workload here that seemed to us best be handled by some consultant services rather than additional staff.
Are there oil spill contingency planning experts out there in the consulting business?
Yes.
This is a growth industry, I think you're finding out. Any questions? Senator Smansky or Senator Fisher? And Dale, did you have anything you wanted to add? Okay. Great.
I am going to ask one question. I know that you didn't bring up. Has your department taken a position on Senate Bill 260?
No.
Do you plan on taking a position?
We haven't decided to or not to. It's. I guess I'd have to say we haven't decided. Okay. We've been focusing more on the parts of these bills that pertain just to us so as to provide some useful information to the legislature. And with the limited people that we have to do it, that's what we've been spending our time on. We haven't really looked at some of those other issues yet.
I was only going to say it's not the most complicated one of the bunch. It only raises money.
Right, that's true. Yeah.
I don't want to speak for the department, but I think that they adequately covered it on page 2 of their overview and that they said they needed adequate funding.
I guess we will go ahead and take a position and have the money.
Okay. 264 and 266 were the response office and core and the strike force. If you'd like to give us separate individual ones, however you'd like to handle it is fine with me for those two.
Okay. On 264, this bill establishes the response office and core. We think that's a good idea. The backup includes the incident command system model, which is one that I think is a good one for us to take a look at as a way to structure a response. The notion of training volunteers and bringing them into the response also seems to us to be a good thing to look at, especially where we've got some people who have some specific local knowledge and skills. And as I said, mentioned before, they've done this in Norway, and there are some models there that we'd like to look at specifically. I don't know that there is any funding for this provided in this bill, and so that's one issue that we'd need to take a look at.
I might at this juncture say that it is my intention to work on a committee substitute that would take what you and we decide are the best of probably 261, 264, and 266, and put them together. There will be a funding mechanism out of the bill, and that's the present battle plan.
Then on 266 provides for a strike force that's specifically to be developed by the state. It doesn't have a role for volunteers here. It provides for a funding source through a levy on crude oil. It definitely provides for a stronger state presence in response and for a funding source, as I mentioned. This bill differs from some of the others in that it's limited to crude oil spills and marine spills, and it also provides that the response would be limited to catastrophes or emergencies. And I guess our thought on that is that those are important priority areas, but there are some benefits if you're going to create a structure in looking a little more broadly, in that tomorrow's crisis or emergency usually isn't exactly the same as today's. And I think our thinking would be that it would be beneficial to contemplate the types of response the state is likely to face as we set up a structure like this. So I guess that would be one perspective on this approach. There are a lot of good features in this bill. The fee structure makes a lot of sense, and the language regarding the strike force and the implementation of that has a lot of good features as well. One other aspect of this that I think would need to be looked at is the issue of cost recovery, and that I'm not sure that the way this is structured, it would provide for cost recovery. And I think that's something that could be fairly easily remedied just by the placement of this fund within some of our existing statutes. But I think that's an important thing to look at here. So to sum up, as I say, I think the funding source and the state presence here are good features. The bill is clearly aimed at large marine crude oil spills. And I guess our thought would be, given our experience, that it might be beneficial to take a little broader view of the types of hazards that we're likely to face here when we're creating this kind of a structure, or if we're creating this kind of a structure.
On that point, I have a couple of specific questions. On the first page, last evening in Senator Halford's discussion of the bill, we decided that perhaps on line 17 we should change marine waters to navigable waters. When we were talking about catastrophic oil spills of crude, we realized that it is entirely possible, although not probable, one would hope, that there could be a spill into the Yukon River. And his thought about that was to say navigable waters. I don't disagree with your point that if we're going to go to the trouble to have a strike force trained to respond, that it would be somewhat, it would be of questionable use to have them trained and only allow them to respond to one sort of hazard. The prime sponsor, though, I'm sorry he's gone, but he had to leave, has a concern, though, about taxing one industry to pay for response to spills caused by something else. And to be honest, at the moment, I can't think of something else that would create a huge response. But I suppose there is something. I guess if Japan really flies over with plutonium someday and they crash, then we'd have the entire force over. I don't know. But well, why don't you speak to those two things a little bit more? Because we're trying to figure out how to handle it.
Well, I can't speak to the issue of the revenues. That's outside of our area. So I would defer to the Department of Revenue on that. On the issue of what kinds of incidents might require a response, one example would be, say, what if you had a tanker that had a load of PCB contaminated oil, for example, that hit a rock somewhere in Cook Inlet or south of Cook Inlet. And that could happen, and it would be, you would want to be able to respond to that, I think. Another example is the Crown Point release that happened 2 years ago. That was something nobody expected to have happen. It would have been very beneficial to us if it had a response capability who could go in and really evaluate that, deal with the people in the area, and oversee the response. So I guess all I can say is that my experience would tell me that it's hard to predict what will happen tomorrow. In order to provide the broadest protection, we would think it might be well to extend this coverage beyond what's here. But I'm not really in a position to speak to the issue of the revenue source versus what's covered. That's not an issue that we have any particular expertise on.
I think the bill specifically refers to the strike force being comprised of oil spill specialists. Has it been your experience, either through the Glacier Bay spill or through the one we're presently handling, are people who you would consider to be an oil spill specialist oftentimes also knowledgeable in other areas? I mean, would we expect these people to know what to do in a Crown Point type event?
I guess to answer that, I think that the state of the art nationally is to look at hazardous substance incidents a little bit more broadly. And a lot of the training and so on that you would go to on spill response would tend to address both oil and hazardous substance releases. There are different techniques that you'd use to respond to different types of events, and certainly if you were to limit it only to oil spills in marine waters, you could narrow down the expertise to just those types of issues. So I guess the answer to your question is that yes, to a certain extent, you could have a more focused expertise if you just looked at oil spills. But the downside of that would be less preparedness potentially to respond to other kinds of health or environmental threats.
Well, let me ask you this. Would it be your, and I know that you're pulling this out of the air, so am I, but would it be your expectation that a Crown Point response that getting ready for a Crown Point response, let's say you put this team together and we say, yes, it's going to cover any hazardous spill. In putting that together, do you think there would be a lot more cost in putting your strike force together to include those sorts of spills than what you're going to have putting a strike force together to have oil spills, just strictly oil spills?
That's a good question. I guess I would need to analyze that. I hate to give you an off the top of my head answer to a question like that.
Okay. Well, it's a question that the committee's going to have to make a decision on before we write and act on the CS, which we hope to do tomorrow night. So if you would please think about that, and I don't know whether the Department of Law wants to be involved in that discussion or not, but we'd appreciate having some feeling of what you think. Senator Fisher.
Yes, thank you. If maybe you're going to put this together, I think maybe we have to decide, first of all, if the response team, strike force, whatever you call it, is going to be a state organization or whether it's going to be a private organization with state overseeing. You know, totally divested of the oil interest. In other words, I'm not saying that the companies get together and form a company like Alyeska Pipeline, but the owners could get together and contract out a private company, response company, that would be bonding and everything else. Because I think that would be a concern I would have. Are we talking about, 50 state employees, or are we talking about two state employees and maybe 35 public sector employees? I mean, private sector employees. And I don't think we've established.
Down the line, or?
I guess I'm not sure what I'm talking about, though. If you don't decide that up front, it's going to affect the cost. If you just leave the latitude there and say, go do something, I think we should have some idea as to what we are going to do, because it can be set up easy. If you give too much
flexibility, then maybe nothing would really come about. And I think they need some guidance as to what we're looking at, instead of just saying, there you go, do something. And then when you come back to us, we may not be just, you know, happy without giving you more specific guidelines what we want you to do.
I guess the mechanism in the bill for funding, Senator Fisher, is kind of a blackmail clause. It stops if we don't appropriate the money into the fund. So if we decided that DEC was not doing it in a way that we approved of, we, the legislature, would not have to appropriate the money, and that would end it.
Yeah, it could be. The only thing I'm saying is the bill can be amended. I mean, I'm not taking this as the final document.
Sure.
And I look at this as a discussion point.
Perhaps that's something, I would suggest that be something, Teresa, that you ask Senator Halford about his intent and have him work with the deputy commissioner. I would like to see them left the latitude to contract out if that becomes more efficient.
I don't think we have a preconceived notion about how this should be done. You know, our policy up to now has been to use contractors on all of our cleanup response work and not to internalize that ourselves, because it seemed it gave us the most versatility to do it that way at lesser cost. And so my only concern is I'm not sure we'll be able to definitively give you a recommendation on that in the next 3 weeks. I think that we would have to assess ourselves what the way that could get us the most effective and versatile response capability would be at the least cost. And so that would be my only comment. It may well be that we would want to contract this out as opposed to hire state employees. This bill would give us that flexibility to do it either way, and I'm not sure that we could give you any advice on which would work better until we have a chance to look into it a little bit more.
Let's think of this in terms of putting it together with the response plan, master plan, so on and so forth. Wouldn't this become part of this master plan, and so you'd be deciding what was best, and you would come back to the legislature with that plan? While I expect it would have been put in place, I suppose if the legislature balked tremendously, we'd certainly have an opportunity to put in our 2 cents worth or 4 cents worth or however many cents worth. But I think that would become part of the whole process, that decision. And I don't particularly want to see the department try to make that decision in the next 3 weeks.
All I'm saying is I don't want to give them just carte blanche, you know, X number of millions of dollars and not really be accountable to us. We're going to be home when we do this. And I'd hate to see long-term commitments. I mean, I would assume any commitment that's made is subject to appropriation. Well, no long-term leases of facilities. You know, they may decide they want these warehouses, which may be all right. But I don't want to see a 10-year lease entered into, and they come back here, and we have to pay it whether we like it or not. And maybe there's another way that's better. Sometimes people don't see the forest for the trees. I'm not saying that's your agency. But I do think we need to do something, and that's what we're all here for. But I don't want to just throw money out there without really knowing that we're going to get real value for that money.
And we don't either. We really don't. So I appreciate what you're saying. Maybe there'd be a way for to keep in contact with some part of the legislature as we went through this, just to provide some feedback there. I think if you are going to combine this idea with the idea of a master plan, that is a good approach, because that lets all these issues be pulled together in a way that will allow for the best analysis. I think that, Madam Chairman, that idea is a good idea to do it that way.
I think whether you like it or not, you're going to be in touch with about 60 of us for a long time. Senator Fisher, I understand your interest and your concern, and I share it. I do think that the funding mechanism is a very strong incentive to the department to put together a plan that the legislature agrees to, because if we don't appropriate the money, their funding stops.
I don't know what you're looking for. You want a response? I mean, there is no response.
Okay. Any other comments on 266 specifically? All right. Did you want to comment on 271, the civil penalties?
if you wouldn't mind, I'd prefer to defer that for another day, so we can give you some more specific recommendations. I think we support the bill in general, and I would like to confer further with the Department of Law on that before I take up your time.
Okay, that's fine. Did you have a specific response on the Resolution 30?
We support the intent of the resolution to look at the technology issue. I think that is an important thing to do. I've not had a chance to consult with the folks involved in the science and technology group to determine whether they feel that this would be the appropriate vehicle, and I think that's something that they would need to determine. But I definitely think that it's a very good idea to look at those technology issues in a structured and disciplined way. So we support that very much.
And on Senate Bill 277, which was the one that Senator Fakes introduced today and gave the overview of this evening, we are going to be doing a CS because we're changing the name. There has been, Senator Kelly suggests that we add the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation in Section B as one of the agencies, if you will, that is asked to nominate a representative to serve as a member of the commission. So DEC would be represented directly on this commission, which would increase it to 15 members. 11 would be appointed by the governor. And other changes that he has suggested include on page 2, I don't know if you have a copy, but on page 2, non-governmental members would be entitled to per diem travel expenses and also to $150 a day while on commission business. It is Senator Kelly's feeling that this commission is going to be spending a great deal of time, and that to ask people from the private sector, particularly fishermen who and someone from the shipping industry, someone from the environmental groups, to ask them to serve on a long-term commission such as this would be, should be allowed to have additional payment above and beyond just per diem. And those were his major, the other things were just name changes where he changed panel to commission. So if you could tell us if you have a position on the commission, period, and also whether or not you want to be on it. Not you personally, but whomever.
Madam Chair, and your staff people kindly faxed that to us earlier today, but we've just not had a chance to look
at it.
That's
fine. Okay, anything else?
No, I appreciate the chance to testify and offer all the comments that you've had, so I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate your doing so. I have talked to your commissioner, and I very much appreciate your response in such a timely manner. I know that we have had you and he on the phone a great deal. We do appreciate it. We hope to take action on some of these bills tomorrow evening with the understanding that the department certainly has both the responsibility and also the ability to come to, I think most of these go to the Resources Committee, to come before Resources and make further technical amendments as you become aware are necessary or that you'd like to request. Thank you. Okay. And finally, we have Mr. Mertz on Senate Bill 271, the civil penalties. And Mr. Mertz, it's my understanding that, I think I'm probably putting words in your mouth, but I'm going to do it anyway, that while the Department of Law does believe that we should look at the civil penalty statute, that you would suggest a more all-encompassing method of doing so. And I feel quite comfortable with your letting us go ahead and put on record now what the department is thinking in terms of that I think is larger.
These are my thoughts, Madam Chair. In all of our statutes, we can discern four basic purposes. One, of course, is to apply strict, clear-out penalties for oil spills. Another is to compensate the state, the public, for damage to resources. Third is to recoup the state's costs of cleanup and so on. And a fourth is to allow the state or private parties to recoup damages to proprietary interests, to direct property damage, for instance. Now, in this case,
Senate Bill 271 starts by removing crude oil from the kinds of petroleum whose spills would give rise to assessments under 4603-758, the dollars per gallon law. The reason I think that would be an error is that 758, if you look at the preamble, the legislative history, and the statements that were made at the time of the original passage by the authors and prime sponsors, is not itself intended as a penalty provision, but is intended to give the public compensation for actual damages which are not quantifiable. As a companion to it, 4603-760E allows the state to recoup damages that are quantifiable, and 760A allows the state to recoup or to gain penalties. By removing crude from 758, the result would be that the state could no longer collect those actual but unquantifiable damages. So what I suggest would be a better way to do it is to leave 758 as it is in that respect, that is, with all kinds of petroleum products covered, so that we can recoup those actual but unquantifiable damages. And if the purpose is to add new penalties or increase penalties, then pass the other section that creates 759 by itself, applying to crude oil spills as pure penalties, or augment the penalties in 760A. We also suggest that in 758 it would be appropriate to remove or raise the ceiling on penalties, or on the assessments, I should say, because there is, in fact, in real life, no artificial ceiling on actual damages. And to raise the levels of the assessments to the level that they were in the original bill, which I believe was $50, $25, and $10, depending on the receiving environment. The reason for that is not only that the present penalties are too low and have also not kept up with inflation, but the original suggested levels in the original bill were calculated to roughly give an equivalent in actual but unquantifiable damages. There was some scientific basis that actually linked them to those actual damages. And by reducing it to the present levels or by substituting a different scheme for crude oil, that connection to the actual damages is no longer as strong. Those are the recommendations that I would make.
Okay. 758, as presently written, is there to recover unquantifiable damages.
Unquantifiable but actual natural right. resource damages.
Okay. And your request would be that we leave crude oil in that statute, we take away the $100 million limitation, so we would collect these unquantifiable damages to the tune of, you're saying 50-10 or?
50-25 or 10.
I'm sorry, 50-25 or 10. And then on top of that, you would suggest another civil penalty for crude oil on top of that.
That's right, making a distinction between actual damages and penalties.
But if they're unquantifiable damages, then I guess I'm lost in the distinction. It was my intent to make, I didn't think that the penalties that are presently in statute were high enough for the financial people in a company to sit down and when they're making their analysis of the risk inherent and the possibilities of loss under these civil penalties that we have in our statutes, even at the extreme, if an entire tanker disgorged itself, a super tanker disgorged itself, I don't think the possible loss there, not thinking about gross negligence, because I don't think you plan for that in the process in the business, the entire amount, the maximum amount, would not be high. Certainly $100 million is not high enough to be much of a blip on the screen, and so we're not providing an incentive to the companies to do everything in their power to make these sorts of things never happen. And I went back also to the history of, in 1977, when the statute was put into place, and there was that discussion in the legislature. They were attempting to make the penalties, because these were unquantifiable damages. Even though we all agreed there were damages, nobody knew, had any idea 3 years later if there was a spill in Prince William Sound, or 10 years later, what those damages were going to be. So they tried to put in a penalty, they tried to put a penalty in place where if you didn't know exactly what the damages were, you were going to have a civil penalty that would make the companies think up front about what they could be hit with. I guess I still don't understand, under your scenario, how Section 758 could be within, I guess, within case law. I suppose the government can attempt to do anything we want. It's our statute, so we can go out and try to get the penalties. But it seems to me that we are doing the same thing twice, the same penalty twice, in 758, and then if I did it again in a civil penalty, that the company would essentially be paying the same thing twice. What am I missing?
What I think you are missing is the distinction between a true penalty, which is not intended as compensation for anything, but is intended as punishment or a disincentive, and an amount that is assessed, whether you call it a penalty or not, and I wish they hadn't used the term in here, but is intended to actually compensate for a loss, a distinct, discrete loss. And here, recognizing the fact that the limits of science are such that we can't quantify all loss. Those we can quantify, of course, we can go after in another section, but there's going to be some loss that we just couldn't get direct compensation for if we had to go out there and prove it scientifically. But we can roughly estimate, given a particular receiving environment, given a particular pollutant that goes into it, roughly what the value of what the public has lost is. So that's the distinction between a pure penalty meant as punishment or disincentive and compensation for a real loss.
Okay, so at the minimum, the administration would like us to change the present 758 to those higher limits, or those higher amounts, and get rid of the $100 million cap.
Right.
Okay. Senator Fisher, do you have any questions?
I guess I'm a little bit confused when we talk about discharge upon the water of public land to the state as far as civil liability goes. How does this affect private land, say along the pipeline, because we're talking land, let's say there's a rupture, and it's private land, however, the state owns the mineral rights, now we're talking the gravel belongs to the state. Does the state, on that basis, can they come in even though they only own the mineral rights, but the surface rights are owned by a private owner?
Well, compensation for the actual damage to the mineral rights would be up to the real private owner to claim, of course. Beyond that, private or public land, the state is the resource for certain, is the trustee for certain natural resources, birds, mammals, fish, critters, and so on. And it is that resource that the state can receive compensation for completely independently of the landowner's interest in this gravel, for instance.
The gravel would belong to the state.
Yeah, that was the wrong example. But say it was other property of his that is affected, the loss of his market value, for instance.
And he would have to file a civil suit.
Right.
And of course, that right here wouldn't apply to that civil case suit at all. Okay.
Any other questions? Any other remarks? What about on any of the other bills? Did you have any specific remarks?
No, I did not.
Okay. Thank you very much. It is the chair's intent tomorrow evening, we're meeting again at 5:30 here in the Senate Finance Room. It is my intention to take public testimony. Once again, I would encourage everyone to keep their testimony short because we do want to be able to take action tomorrow evening. We will have before us for action House Bill 68. We'll have Senate Bill 260. We will have Senate Bills 261, 264, and 266 in some reform. Not quite sure what yet. We'll have Senate Bill 271 and Senate Bill 277. We'll hold off on Senate Concurrent Resolution 30 until next week. So it's my intent that we attempt to take action, if the committee desires, on those bills tomorrow evening. We will once again begin at 5:30. We'll take public testimony statewide. We'll be teleconferencing statewide. I would encourage everyone to testify just on these bills. You will have the opportunity to, once again, I will remind everyone, you'll have the opportunity to testify specifically on the Exxon Valdez Prince William Sound spill before the joint committee on that spill that is being put together by the legislature. That will happen probably in your community later this summer. I thank everyone for their attention again, and we'll see everyone tomorrow evening at 5:30. We are adjourned.